Before we get started with today's show, let me invite you to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at The Real Tavis Smiley, and get updates on X, that's formerly Twitter, at Tavis Smiley. By the way, should you miss any part of today's program or want to catch up on previous shows, you can always visit thetavissmileyshow.com. That's thetavissmileyshow.com, or wherever you get your podcast, and listen to the Tavis Smiley podcast version of this live program at your leisure. Another great show on tap for you today in our second hour.
There's a bay up in Alaska, oh, so cold and clear. A home for creatures great and small till the pipeline appeared to bring us fuel to heat our homes and gas for us to drive. Now the sea is black with oil and all the fish have died. So who's to tell us why? There's a forest in Brazil, sheltered by the rain, where the tall trees made the air we till the cattle barons came and cleared the land for grazing, 50,000 trees a day. Now the Amazon's on fire, and that's progress, they say. But what a price to pay. Who's lying in the garden? Who's holding the sea?
Alice Randall joins us in hour two to talk about her groundbreaking country music career and her book, My Black Country. The book also has a companion album of the same name, celebrating the black female experience in country and folk, and features the songs of Alice Randall recorded by some amazing artists like Reese Palmer. The track you just heard is called Who's Minding the Garden, an original, of course, Alice Randall track recorded by Reese Palmer. I look forward to talking to Alice Randall today in hour two. And speaking of Alice Randall, her country music contributions are vast, but her backstory is the thing. I have interviewed just about everybody in my broadcast career, but rarely anyone with a backstory quite as fascinating as Alice Randall's. You want to hear all about that in our second hour today. I look forward to it. In our third hour, two more conversations as we continue to focus our attention on Black Maternal Health Week. Up first, a conversation with Heather Clark, president of the American College of Nurse Midwives, about the history of Black midwifery in the U.S. and the disparities in Black maternal health. On the B side of our three, the historical significance of Black doulas in bringing joy to childbirth. Safia Monroe will explain the difference, which I just learned preparing for this conversation, the difference between a midwife and a doula. On the back side of our three, we celebrate in our third hour today Black Maternal Health Week. But in this first hour today,
are you, as we sit here right now, aware of any threats to U.S. troops in the region?
We are staying vigilant to exactly that potential threat, but we have not seen any attacks on U.S. troops or personnel in the region or our facilities, nothing to report to this morning, but we're going to obviously watch that very, very closely.
Just to get a sense of how this came together, did the United States have any back-channel communications with Iran, if only to deconflict the airspace over Syria?
I would just, not in terms of the operations, but I mean, obviously in the lead up to what happened yesterday,
we made it very clear.
I would just say we made it very clear to all parties, including Iran, what we would do and how we would continue to defend Israel, and also how seriously we would take any potential threat to our personnel and our facilities in the region.
A lot of people watched what happened in the skies over the Middle East overnight, and they are wondering this morning, has this now escalated into a wider war?
I don't think there's any reason that it needs to.
Are we now in the midst of a wider war?
The president doesn't believe that it needs to move in that direction whatsoever, Kristen. What Israel demonstrated last night was an incredible ability to defend itself. Just their own military superiority was quite remarkable yesterday. I mean, very little got through, and the damage was extraordinarily light. And also, Israel demonstrated again, as I said, that they're not standing alone, that they have friends. So the president's been clear, we don't want to see this escalate. We're not looking for a wider war with Iran. I think I think, you know, the coming hours and days will tell us a lot.
But what's your response to Americans who see those missiles being intercepted in the skies overnight and believe that this has already escalated?
I would ask the Americans that saw what happened last night to take heart in terms of the military capability of their forces in the region, how they are defending themselves and defending our interests in the region. And also, I reiterate what I said before. Know that the president is working the diplomatic side of this personally. In fact, today, just a little bit later today, he's going to call the G7 together to talk about a diplomatic response here.
That is National Security Spokesperson John Kirby on Meet the Press on NBC yesterday. Some have argued, maybe you are one of those that the escalating Middle East crisis represents the early stages of World War III, given Iran's unprecedented counterattack on Israel over the weekend. Others maintain that Iran's slow-moving, thoroughly telegraphed retaliation was mostly performative, meant to send a message and that both sides can now move to de-escalate. So, is it over for now? Or will Israel respond? And will the U.S. get pulled deeper into this? On the B side of this hour, we'll speak with Ryan Grimm from The Intercept and get his take on these questions and more. Plus, today, former President Donald Trump goes on trial in Manhattan, the first former president to be criminally prosecuted. Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, is accusing Trump of falsifying business records in the first degree, 34 felony counts, all of which are tied to the former president's role in hush money payments to the porn star Stormy Daniels. The Intercept's Ryan Grimm joins us on the backside of this hour. But when we come forward, we will commence this program today with Phyllis Bennis, director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, talking about the crisis in the Middle East. You're listening, and I'm glad about it, to Tavis Smiley.
Interrogating and unpacking.
That's what we do around here.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Smart talk for curious people just like you.
Just like you.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Smiley. Smiley.
Busy news day around here. Let's get this party started. Please be joined now by the author, activist, and director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, our friend Phyllis Bennis. Phyllis, good to have you back. How are you today?
Very well. Great to be with you, Tavis.
It's good to have you on. Good to hear your voice. Let's make the most of the time that we have here. I played a clip a moment ago of John Kirby on the program Meet the Press yesterday, NBC, trying to downplay this. But I asked a moment ago, let me start with this. There are those who say that this is the early stages of World War III. On the other side, just to oversimplify it, I understand, some believe we're headed toward World War III and these are the early days. Others believe that now that Iran has responded in a slow-moving way, totally telegraphed way, that now both sides can begin, can commence a sort of de-escalation. Foreign leaders all around the world are encouraging Bibi Netanyahu to not respond to this, but to move toward de-escalation. Those are essentially the two thoughts. There are more than those two, but that's essentially the argument comes from both sides. Your take?
Well, I think it's certainly clear that this is a moment when there should and must be de-escalation. There has been an escalating process in the Middle East since the beginning of this current Israeli offensive against Gaza that has resulted in this horrific level of genocide, actual genocide, and starvation and famine now, as well as the hundreds of thousands of people that are having their houses destroyed, being forced out of their homes, and tens of thousands who have been killed by bombing. With all of that, we now are seeing escalation on a regional level, and this action over the weekend, the Iranian firing of missiles and drones against Israel, was very clearly, officially acknowledged that way by Iran, in retaliation for the Israeli attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus, in Syria, about a week and a half ago, on April 1st. Mm-hmm. And in that context, the Iranians actually said, We're saying now this is done. This was our answer. You crossed our red lines. We responded. Now it's over. So now the ball is in Netanyahu's court, as you say, Tavis. And the danger is that, as we've seen throughout the period of the escalation that Israel has carried out in Gaza, Netanyahu is feeling completely capable, and there's been no consequences so far, for simply refusing what not only President Biden, but all of the leaders around the world are saying: don't go back with another military response to this. You know, the U.S. is now claiming, President Biden is claiming, well, we won't support a, and we won't participate in an Israeli offensive move now against Iran, an, another retaliation. But by saying we won't support an offensive move, he's implying that we would support, the U.S. would support, and he's clearly comfortable with this, would support what would be called a defensive action. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the problem is there's no difference between them. You know, if Israel attacks now, there will be an Iranian response to that. And at that point, the U.S. will be at war with Iran. There's no question about that. So it's a very dangerous moment.
So there are, again, two ways to read this, as I see it. Number one, that should Bibi Netanyahu decide to respond, he has a horrible track record of, as a matter of fact, I'm sure he's never heard the word measured or the phrase measured response. Nothing he does is ever measured. Look at what's happening inside of Gaza right now. So I can't imagine that if he decides to respond, it's going to be commensurate with what Iran did. As I said, I think it was largely performative. It was to send a message. I mean, I paid attention to this over the weekend and really spent some time understanding what Iran did. Understand this. They sent three kinds of weapons. One of those weapons takes about 8 hours to arrive from Iran to Israel. They told them 8 hours before it got there, it's coming. Get ready to shoot it down. A second group of those weapons takes about 2 hours to get there. More than enough time to respond. The third weapon takes about 12 minutes to get there. Still, with their defense system in Israel, enough time to respond. This was totally telegraphed. So it's Iran sending a response, sending a message, but not trying to kill a bunch of people. And to your point, they've now said it is over. So
Absolutely, the question, but
the question is whether or not Bibi has the humility, the humanity, and frankly, as far as I'm concerned, the good sense to not respond, to push us into World War III. But there are those who believe that Israel, just given where it sits and all the enemies around it, that they cannot ever let anyone fire on them and not respond because that sends the wrong message. I yield to you, Phyllis Bennis.
You know, the message that was sent by Iran even went before that first 9-hour process. They gave 72 hours notice to a number of capitals around the world,
yes,
saying this is about to happen. And as you say, it was a small enough attack that was deliberately designed not only to be vulnerable to those anti-aircraft systems that worked very well, but they also were aimed solely at military targets, hit a few of them very lightly, very little damage done. And as you say, the crucial part was no one was killed. There was injury to one child where there was shrapnel that hit a house. That was it. And that's hugely important, and that was clearly part of the Iranian performance. As you say, this was a performative action. And it's one of these situations that we're seeing now where Iran hawks in the United States, people like John Bolton was saying over the weekend, that this is an opportunity, that this should be what Israel views as an opportunity to take out Iran's nuclear arsenal, as if there was an arsenal. There isn't. There are no Iranian nuclear weapons. There is an Iranian nuclear program that's designed for producing power, etc. And the idea that he's promoting the notion that Netanyahu should now go and attack those nuclear facilities is so incredibly reckless, incredibly dangerous. And while it doesn't match what President Biden has said, Biden has talked a good talk of de-escalation and saying we don't need more escalation, the actions of the U.S. have been very escalatory over these last 6 months. This is all rooted in the crisis that's going on in Gaza. We can't separate the two. And in that context, it's a very dangerous moment because the Iran hawks here in the United States, as well as in Israel, are feeling emboldened and empowered by this. You know, this is their moment. This is their moment when they can say, okay, we're now with a prime minister who's more popular than he was just before this as a, quote, war leader. And it's ultimately going to be first the Palestinians who pay the price for this because as we speak, the bombing of Gaza is continuing. The starvation in Gaza continues. Children are still dying. So this is all going on while now the world's attention is away from Gaza and focusing on the question of Iran and Israel. So it is a very dangerous moment in the region as well as here. And we have to look at that broader context of the Gaza crisis as the basis for the level of regional escalation that's been underway. The U.S. has said for 6 months now, we don't want this to escalate across the region. And I think that's probably a majority view mm-hmm. here in Washington. But the actions of the U.S. in saying no to every other force, saying yeah. no to the Houthis and no to Hezbollah and no to Hamas, all of the forces that are opposed to the Israeli assault on Gaza, and saying nothing but yes to Israel. Yeah. So that's been hugely problematic because President Biden's words, which have changed in response to the incredible movement we've seen rising in demanding a ceasefire, demanding an end to the denial of food and medicine, et cetera, in response to that, there has been a shift in language, but there has been no shift
in policy,
in action, yeah. which means the U.S. Mm-hmm. is still providing weapons to the Israelis and not doing anything to yeah. make sure that there are consequences when they say no.
I got 5 minutes left with you. Don't want to make the most of it and uncover a few more pieces that I want to get your take on. Let me start with this. I've been at this a long time, as have you. We're in two different lanes, but we know spin when we see it. We know spin when we smell it. I played a clip from John Kirby, again, the National Security Council spokesperson, yesterday on Meet the Press. And he was trying to frame and trying to spin an answer to a question that we are not as yet and expect not to be in a wider war. I'm not sure I buy that argument. If you read the backstory to what happened over the weekend, there are now 16 countries, count them, 16 countries already involved in this in one shape or form. Don't tell me that we're not getting into a wider war. We're already in a wider war.
We are absolutely already in a wider war. There has been a war expanding across this region for the last 6 months. It has before this, but in this particular moment, it's been going on for 6 months. And this is something that is very, very dangerous. We heard from Senator Cardin, Israel has the right to defend itself before, during, and after any strike like this, and that Biden should lead an international effort so that Iran feels the pain. This is incredibly reckless talk, that there should be further escalation in this region where there is one nuclear-armed country, that's not Iran, that's Israel. This is a very, very dangerous threat to talk about escalation in this kind of a reckless way. And what we're seeing here, as you say, Tavis, it is very important. We had countries from the U.S., the Brits, Jordan, other countries that were directly involved in shooting down some of these Iranian drones and missiles that crossed their own territory. We're also hearing that other countries have volunteered to back up Israel if this thing goes further. So this is a very serious threat of escalation. The calls for de-escalation are very important, and it is important that the Biden White House has been calling for de-escalation. The problem is the actions don't always match those words.
Yeah.
And until we get a clear understanding from the White House that it will not provide any more weapons to Israel, it's not going to be matching its words of calling for a de-escalation on all sides.
Let me ask you whether or not, and if so, to what extent this action by Iran, measured though it may have been, telegraphed though it may have been, slow-moving though it may have been, does it send a message to other Arab states? And if so, what is that message?
Well, I think the message to the Arab states in the region, the Gulf states in particular, that have been mobilized by the U.S. against Iran, this is a big goal of the U.S. regional plan here, is building up this Israel and Saudi-led anti-Iran coalition. The message from Iran, which was very explicit in the words of the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations over the weekend, mm-hmm. was explicitly, we're done here, and nobody else should get involved. So they're warning the Arab allies of the U.S. and Israel, the Saudis, the UAE, the other countries in the Gulf states, they're warning them, do not attack us. The Jordanians were very careful. When they shot down a couple of the Iranian drones and missiles, they were very clear, we're not doing this to defend Israel. We are doing this because you have missiles in our airspace.
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable. So we're bringing them down now. But they were very clear that this was not designed to mobilize in the context of an Israeli an Israeli-led coalition against Iran. Iran was very clear about its motivations, that this was something that was retaliation for a clear violation of international law when Israel attacked its embassy in Damascus. You know, the Vienna Convention makes it illegal under any circumstances to attack an embassy or a diplomatic venue, which is exactly what Israel did. And it killed two top generals and five other significant officials of the Iranian military. So that was a very provocative action that Israel knew would require a response from Iran. And that's what we're looking at here. Does it stop here?
Yeah.
Or does this incrementally or dramatically, either way, lead to greater escalation?
I've got a tight 60 seconds here. I'll give it to you. If Bibi Netanyahu does, in fact, decide to respond, whatever that looks like, what's Joe Biden's next move?
Joe Biden says he will not support any offensive move. The problem will be there is no way that we can expect him not to support Israel in the tit-for-tat that would follow that officially offensive move in something that would be called defense, but would be as offensive as could be, and the U.S. would be right in there.
Nothing like splitting hairs in Washington
exactly.
parlance, but I digress for now. Phyllis Bennis is author, activist, and director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Always happy to get her on the phone in moments like these for her insights. Phyllis will do it again, sadly, I suspect, in the days ahead. But I always look
Thanks
forward to it.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate you coming on the program. Thanks for your time. When we come forward, we'll continue our conversation about this with Ryan Grimm. He's the D.C. Bureau Chief for The Intercept. Anxious to get his take on this is a provocative piece out right now from The Intercept about what happened over the weekend. And of course, Donald Trump is right now in day one of this trial in Manhattan. We'll talk about that. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
For all the freedom-loving folk, this is Tavis Smiley.
I feel like freedom.